Welcome to the Jacob's Well podcast. These messages are intended to feed you some great stuff that you can really dig your teeth into all week and beyond. That's why you can find it anytime, along with other great resources and ways to keep the conversation going at jacobs-well.net/leftovers. Enjoy the message.
So we're talking about bodies this week. It's something we've been talking about the last 2 weeks, because we all have these bodies. There are these things we inhabit, or they are us, depending on how far you want to get into the body-mind debate. And just to give you a little history, the first week of this, we talked about bodies plus or minus health, and we talked about, like, well, what does health mean? Health is this thing that's different for each person. Then we talked about transitions, and we talked about the scars that a lot of us have, especially around childbirth, and how that really does change our bodies. And this week, we're talking about bodies plus or minus shame. And before we get too far into that, we're supposed to distribute popsicles. So all the kids, could you come up, like, here-ish area?
He's not as scary as he looks, yeah. I promise.
You can come over here with those. We'll get them in a second. I have to ask you some questions first, though. So, like, I'm just curious. Like, how many of you can run? Show me running. What does it look like? Yeah, sweet. Okay. How many of you... This is good. How many of you can jump? What does it look like? All right. How many of you can do somersaults?
Oh, we're not going to do this on the hard floor.
Not on the hard floor, but like, you don't have to show me, but like, how many of you can do a somersault?
I can.
Yeah, like a decent number of you.
I do
powering
those lines,
definitely. Cool. Hey, well, thanks. Let's get y'all some popsicles now. Go ahead.
What?
All right, now I got a question for you adults. How many of you can run?
Uh-oh.
Got a few hands. Okay. How many of you can jump?
I'm sorry.
Let me see.
I think
Let me
we
see
ran
you jump.
Out. I'm sorry.
Oh, I got the sitting jump. All right, thanks. How many of you can do a somersault? Yeah, a few. All right,
wow.
That's impressive. That's
Who
impressive.
Who wants to come up and show us?
Me.
Anybody over 18 want to come up and show us?
Yeah. So it's interesting. You look at the kids, they're all like running around, they're down here, they're like literally just like running all over the place and like jumping as soon as I'm talking about jumping, and they would have done somersaults if this wasn't like a super hard floor. But then like when we become adults, like, can you jump? And I saw like a bunch of people doing this kind of thing where you're just kind of like, yeah. I don't know, that doesn't seem like a jump to me. And with somersaults, like, nobody's out here doing somersaults.
Correct.
And I think the point of this that I'm trying to bring up is our bodies are these fantastic things, and we really appreciate them as kids. But something changes a little bit as we become adults.
Absolutely. We become really aware of our bodies. In a lot of ways, that's good, right? Like, if I tried to do a somersault right now, I would probably be paying for it for about 3 days. And I don't know about the rest of you. But that awareness can also lead to shame. Right, we can be aware of what our bodies need and what they can do, but we can also be just overwhelmingly aware of what's wrong with our bodies.
That's
and
fun.
We lose that sense of joy in our bodies that we just saw with the kids who came running up here and were super ready to show us what they could do.
Yeah, exactly. And this, so like we were saying, this awareness that we have of our bodies, that can be a really positive thing to recognize. Like, okay, I can't do all of the stuff that I used to. I'd practice doing a somersault outside. I'm not as good as I used to be at it. But like, that awareness was helpful in that situation. But also, it really can lead to shame in a lot of situations where we feel scared of our bodies and we don't want to do a somersault, not because we can't, but because we don't want to like be embarrassed in front of everyone else, or we don't want to look bad in front of everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And this gets at this idea of body shaming and body shaming is essentially telling people that they have less value because of their body. This is on your Sunday paper. Feel free to fill in and take notes as you're going along. It's the sense, I'm sure that all of you have some idea, but just to give you an idea of what we're talking about here, it's this idea of like everyone judging you, everyone looking at you, you feeling self-conscious about your body, like you start to cross your arms and like kind of get smaller all of a sudden. You're not doing any of these power poses that you'll see every once in a while. And I'm sure all of us have some experience of like body shame in some capacity. Just to give you an idea of mine, this is an old photo taken of me. This one, if you look at the date that was in 2007. I've been on Facebook for a long time. And you'll notice I'm hiding my face. And I did that quite a bit during this time period because I didn't really like people taking photos of me. And I'm guessing that probably had something to do with shame around my body and around not being proud of my body. Now, the interesting thing, you'll see that I still write king on there. That's the mind of a 16-year-old boy is complicated.
Agreed.
Yeah. So we've experienced this thing of body shame in all sorts of different ways. Sometimes it's more of a funny thing. Sometimes it's more of a serious thing. But I think it's really important to ask the question, like, what is the point of this body shaming? Like, why does this happen?
I think the socially acceptable reason is to, like, get people to be their best, right? Or to look their best. This is kind of the whole idea behind things like weight loss advertisements, right? They're saying, there's something wrong with your body. Give us money and we'll fix it. And that whole marketing aspect is based on the idea that there's something wrong with our body, that we should feel ashamed of something about our body, and that we need to change it. But this idea that it's socially acceptable to tell people that there's something wrong with them. There's something wrong with them and they need to fix it. And body shaming is a way that we do that. But it doesn't work.
Yeah. So, I would totally agree. It doesn't really work. So, like, why is this body shaming a problem, though? Like, aren't you just trying to help people out and, like, make people be their best self? And
well,
healthy?
For one thing, as we said, it's not effective, right? Like, you can't shame people into changing their behavior. There's this great quote by Brené Brown, who's an author and social worker, and it says, we cannot grow when we are in shame, and we can't use shame to change others or ourselves, which I think is really powerful because there are a lot of things that we're told are shameful about ourselves that we need to change, but that's not really the way to grow, right? You can't grow if you hate yourself. You can't grow if you're feeling like you don't matter, that you are worthless or less valuable. That's not a space of growth. That's a space of shame and stagnation because it's not something that fosters growth.
Yeah, exactly. One of the conversations we were having earlier is that when you feel ashamed of yourself, you also don't feel empowered at all. And the only way that you can, like, achieve that growth is by being empowered yourself, mm-hmm. and taking those steps yourself and owning whatever change you're trying to make. So we get body shaming. It's something we experience, and we can see why it's a problem. It's not actually really, it's not super effective. Why is this happening? Why does body shaming continue to happen even though we ostensibly want to be against body shaming? Why is that a problem?
Human beings really like categories. I don't know if you guys have ever, if those of you who are parents or spend a lot of time with kids, when they're really little, and start liking to sort things and put things in categories. And if something doesn't fit in a category, it's like, it's a big deal. Like, they can't figure it out. And that's part of human development, right? That figuring out what goes where, and we create shortcuts in our brain to make living as a human being in the world easier. Like, if every time I saw a bear, I had to think, okay, there are claws, there are teeth, it's much bigger than me. If I had to, you know, make that decision that a bear is dangerous individually every time I saw a bear, I probably would not be standing here because I would have been eaten by a bear. So our brain makes shortcuts, right, that say bear is dangerous. A bear is something that I need to fear. So those shortcuts and those categories are part of human development. The problem is when we use the categories we use to get through life and apply them to people and then assign value to them. So we all know that we put people in categories. We put people in categories of, you know, this person has authority over me, your boss at work, or, you know, this person is my peer, is my friend, you know, the best friend that you girl, you know, hang out with on a Friday night. We put them in categories. But those things can be equally valuable to us. But if we start assigning people value based on their categories, we're saying that there is something about you that makes you less than, less valuable.
Yeah, this evolutionary trait that's kept us safe from bears and wolves and other hostile peoples. Like, this evolutionary trait is something that has served us pretty well, but we're past that. Like, I don't know how many bears you run into. It's only happened to me one time where I've run into a bear in my whole life. And so these categories stop being something that's incredible, that's helpful. And when it comes to social interactions, they can be this thing that's kind of harmful. So like, I think we all get this idea of like body shaming existing, and we talked about like magazine covers and airbrushing and how that leads to an unhealthy body image. But what does this look like on an individual level? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not responsible for this at all, right? Like, I don't play any part in this body shame game, right?
Oh, sure, Paul. No, not at all. No, but you're right. As an individual, it's easy to say like, oh, that's a societal problem. I'm five steps away from that. I'm good. But on an individual level, empathy is really hard. It's really painful sometimes to really be with somebody in their experience and open yourself up to sharing that experience with them. And so we try every trick in the book to avoid empathy, to avoid identifying with people who are experiencing something that we perceive as bad or as shameful or as painful. And so we make as much distance between ourselves and this other person as possible by assigning them certain categories like fat or like somebody of a different race or somebody of a different ability level. We put distances between ourselves so that we don't have to feel that pain.
Yeah, it's hard to see someone in pain, and if you can somehow like put them in a different category than you and say like, "Oh, this is I don't belong. They're one of those people over there, and I'm over here. I don't have to feel empathy. I don't have to feel bad when they're suffering."
Absolutely, or when we perceive them to be suffering.
Yeah.
Right. So we've been talking a lot about bodies and weight and size, and you know, as somebody who I describe myself as fat, and I don't see that as something that is suffering or bad for me, but other people do. Right. Like that's perceived to be a bad thing. And so people put their distance between themselves and what they perceive to be bad. And come up with reasons that person is in that situation because of choices they made. That there's some reason. There's a reason that they're there and I'm not. And that's a much more comfortable place to be than thinking, that could be me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, even like you were talking about, as we were talking about this, I felt really uncomfortable. Like, I don't know. I felt uncomfortable around using the language fat to describe people, because in most of the experiences that I have, that's used as a negative thing. Fat is negative. And we had a really good conversation where you pointed out, like, no, that doesn't have to be true. Like, that can just be a descriptive thing. That can be a category without it being, like, a value.
Right.
Judgment on somebody. Mm-hmm. You can say, this person is fat without saying, this person is less valuable than other people.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in order to like get towards this category, in order to put people in categories, and in order to have this space where it's easier to judge people, because we do want to put people in categories, we often tell a single story. Mm-hmm. And I think of a friend of mine, Chris, who grew up using a wheelchair and who still uses a wheelchair. And this single story that everyone would tell about Chris is that, oh, he uses a wheelchair. And that's the only thing that they know about him, essentially. That's the only thing they're willing to really learn about him. And what they don't know is that he's like a Packers fan, and he's super fun and funny, and he can be like a little authoritarian when he gets in a leadership position. he's a full human being. He's not.
Yep.
But we tell this single story about a person like Chris, and then we don't get to actually know the whole person. And so it's much easier to keep people in a category when we tell that single story. Like, we have a photo up here of, there's a fat person and a skinny person. It feels a little weird for me to say, but we're using it descriptively. We're not using it as a value judgment. So there's a fat person and a skinny person. The single story that we say is that fat person must be rich or really funny or something like that. And that because we assume that fat person has less value than the skinny person. And that's a single story we come in saying when we see images like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard stories of couples who, you know, their bodies happen to look like that. And at restaurants, they're constantly asked if they want separate checks, which is not, on the surface, a bad thing, right? You know, it's just a waiter not trying to be rude, but just asking something. But if I go out with my boyfriend and, you know, we're generally asked what if we want a single check, right? Like, people make assumptions about you based on how you look. And if they're assuming that, oh, these two people couldn't be together, that is a value judgment they're making, right? That, oh, these two must just be friends because they couldn't be in a romantic relationship. And that's the kind of assumption we make about when we see this kind of image or a relationship, we make all sorts of assumptions that absolutely have nothing to do with how these people look.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you were telling me earlier about a single story that fat people get a lot is around dieting, food and exercise. And
absolutely. So I had this experience of my siblings sitting around talking about different diets. And granted, there's a lot of PhDs in the room, so it was a little bit academic. But my thought process was, like, if you want to learn about diets, you ask a fat person, because I've never met a fat person who hasn't tried at least 3 or 4 diets. And I include myself in that, right? Like, I know a lot about diets and fad diets because I tried them. And people wouldn't assume that about me because of the way I look. And that's an experience I've heard from pretty much every other person that I've talked to about it, that, you know, you've tried everything in the book and it just hasn't worked, and that feels like a failure. It feels as though, and people perceive it as a failure, right? We talk about dieting in success or failure, right? And there is, I'm not saying anything about, you know, having goals for your own health, but if we look at not being able to lose weight as a failure, what does that say about, you know, what people who have more poundages on them, right? That's another value judgment that we're making.
Definitely. Yeah, it gets back to this idea of a single story. It's much mm-hmm. easier to tell a single story and say, this person is fat because of diet choices. Mm-hmm. That's the easy single story to make. But then when you actually talk to someone who is fat and you realize, oh, there's a lot more going on here than I thought, it totally breaks open that category, that single story that you have. So we've talked a lot about this idea of single story. I want you to turn to your neighbor, someone near to you, and talk about a single story that that someone has told about your body, or a single story that you've experienced, if you can't think of one around your body. And so we'll give you a few minutes to just talk about this idea of single stories with your neighbors. So I would invite you to come back. I heard last week that there was a couple who never stopped talking to each other, so if this is really important, just keep having that conversation. You know what you need. So we've talked about this idea of categories and how mm-hmm. categories can be harmful, and those can lead to body shaming. We've talked about this idea of a single story and how telling a single story about people can lead to body shaming. And finally, we think it's okay to give these categories and to give these value judgments and to give these single stories, to tell them to the people around us. Mm-hmm. So, like, why do we think that that's an acceptable thing to do, to make a comment on somebody else's body when they didn't ask for it, when they have no interest in it, but when you think that I need to share my opinion with this other person about their body?
Well, I think there's a couple of things going on there. That, for one thing, when we're talking about appearance and body size, we as a society have decided that being fat is so bad that it's like free rein to talk about it, free rein to tell people that their body is wrong. And that's kind of a weird thing to actually call out. But if you think about it, how many advertisements do you see that are shaming the person in the advertisement? Or how many comments, especially women, that you get about your bodies? And so there's that idea that it's okay because we've decided that this is something that's so bad that we get to talk about it. Yeah. But I also think the underlying piece of that is fear, right? That the more distance I can put between myself and someone that I've decided is bad, the safer I feel. We build up this distance by dehumanizing the other people and making comments that sort of reinforce our superiority. And you can see this in a lot of different ways, right? We dehumanize people to put distance between ourselves. You know, other not body examples might be people who are incarcerated, right? We tell all sorts of, make all sorts of assumptions about somebody who has experienced being incarcerated because that's something we're fearful of and we want them to be different than us. And that happens a lot with folks in terms of their body as well.
Definitely. There's a fantastic, I'm just going to give a shout out to a podcast right now called Ear Hustle that I would highly recommend. That's Ear Hustle. So like ear and then hustle. And it really blows up the whole single story that we tell about folks who are incarcerated. And it's out of San Quentin Prison. Really good podcast. Not entirely related to body shaming, although they do some talk about bodies there. But it's just that's a really good podcast for getting past the single story that we tell. Mm-hmm. Because we want to say, if I grew up in that area, I wouldn't have made those same choices. But like in reality, like...
We don't know.
We don't know, yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think this is often not a conscious choice that we make. You know, most of us are not sitting here thinking, all right, how can I best dehumanize this person? Like, we don't think like that, right? I mean, if you do, maybe we should talk and...
Yeah, we'll talk afterwards.
We'll figure something out.
Yeah.
But it's not conscious for most of it. It is an unconscious, instantaneous value judgment that we make and that we continue to make those choices to build that distance to make ourselves feel safer.
Yeah. And I want to say... We've talked a lot about like kind of the ways that the world is negative right now. We've talked about like single stories and categories and the way that we give our opinion to other people. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to live in that kind of world. We don't have to live in a world where people feel shame around their bodies. I think we've been immersed in this world for such a long time that we think this is normal, but it doesn't have to be. We can choose to live in a different world and have a different world for us and for our kids.
Absolutely. We can choose to live in a world that values every person. We shape the world around us with every single choice that we make. And we recognize that there are biases and stereotypes and self-shame and things that we have internalized that are not going to change overnight, right? Like we can't always control our thoughts. But there is a part of your brain between your initial thought and your mouth for a reason. Right? Because we can't control our thoughts. You know, I have anxiety. I struggle with anxiety. And there's a lot of thoughts that go on in my head that I have to say, nope, I'm not going to listen to that. I'm not going to act based on those anxiety thoughts. And whether or not you've experienced that, I think we all have those moments where we have thoughts that we know are not the kindest version of ourselves. Or we know are not actually what we believe, but some long-buried cultural bias is coming up, and that's our initial thought. But there's that part of our brain that gets to process that first before we say or do anything. So we can choose to act and talk based on stereotypes and biases, or we can choose to intentionally make our world a better place and one that does not assign value to people based on what they look like.
Yeah. Yeah, so we've got three thoughts. Not necessarily, this isn't an exhaustive list by any means, and I'm always welcome to hear input. But we've got three thoughts on like how do we actually like bring about this mm-hmm. better world that we talk about? This world where people don't feel shame around their bodies, and this world where we feel like we can just be our own bodies and we don't have to apologize for our own bodies. And this first thought is be kind to yourself. There's a really good passage in Matthew, and Jesus is asked what's the most important law? And there's 600 or so laws in the book of Leviticus, and so the person who's asking Jesus is kind of trying to trick Jesus and be like, all right, there's 600 laws, which one is the most important one? And Jesus says, all right, well, what's the first one is love your God with all your heart. Oh, I misspelled that, my bad. That's on me. With all your heart, I guess ears, all your heart and your soul and with all your mind. This is the first great commandment. And then, if you go to the next slide. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments, which is just kind of like, boom, mic drop. When you hear that, love your neighbor as yourself, I'm guessing you hear love your neighbor, right? You're just like, yeah, be kind to people, okay. You're missing like half of that law. And the other half of that law is love yourself. This is really like the first part of this, even though it's in the second part. You have to love yourself before you can love other people. Mm-hmm. You can try and fake it, and I think a lot of us do from time to time, but if you're not loving your own body, if you don't love your own body and the things that it can do and the way that it is in the world, it's going to be really hard for you to love other people's bodies.
Absolutely. I think of a very specific recent experience I had where a dear friend of mine who is an absolutely lovely person and would never intentionally hurt me, we were talking about some insecurities she was experiencing around her body, that she was feeling like she couldn't be attractive because she was overweight. And I said to her, I said, well, I'm overweight, and kind of just left it there as a way of saying, you know, you wouldn't be saying these things that you're saying about yourself. You wouldn't say them to me, and I know that. And I'm sort of joining you in this insecurity of being overweight and having people tell us that that is not attractive. And her response to that was, well, you have diabetes, so you have an excuse. And I do have type 1 diabetes. That's a true fact. But the way she phrased that, what that said to me was that I needed an excuse to look this way. And that did not feel good, because it meant that there was something so wrong about me that I had to have something, this lifelong chronic condition, to justify it. And she was really, that was coming from a place of her own insecurity, right? She was saying, well, I wouldn't say these horrible things about Sarah because Sarah has a reason for being overweight. I don't, and therefore I am ashamed, and I am in, like, I cannot be attractive. And that's this idea that Paul was talking about, that because of the way she was feeling about her body, she was not able to be a loving friend to me in that moment. She couldn't meet me where I was at there because of how she felt about herself. Yeah. And that was a really hard thing to realize, is that as much as I know her very well, and she would have been, and was, when I told her, heartbroken to think that she'd made me feel that way, but it was the fact that she did not love herself in that moment that made her hurt me. And that is, I think, a very powerful thing to remember, that, you know, we can try and be kind to other people, but if we hate ourselves and are not being loving to ourselves, that is going to come out in how we treat other people.
Definitely. Yeah, last week we had Angie and Mike from the Midriff Movement here, and during the video that they shared, there was a mother who said, I want my daughters to love their body, but I don't love my own. And that's the unfortunate reality, is this isn't something that you can kind of like fake for yourself and then give it legitimately towards other people. If you don't love your own body, then it's going to be really hard for you to legitimately love other people's bodies. Mm-hmm. And so we have a little practice. It's going to feel a little silly when you do it, but I would encourage you to try it. This is going to look, what works for you is going to be different than what maybe works for me. So I want you to take your arms, and I want you to wrap them around yourself in a hug. And I want you to say, I love you, body.
I love you, body.
You help me love and live.
You help me love and live.
You have scars and marks, and I still love you.
You have scars and marks, and I still love you.
Thank you, body.
Thank you, body.
All right. Maybe that felt like, oh, yeah, that's perfect. That's exactly what I need. Or maybe that felt like, no, this is too weird. I don't even hug other people. I'm not going to hug myself. But I would really encourage you to find something that makes you love your body. For me, that's like playing basketball and like mm-hmm. biking are moments where I really love my body. And those are activities that, like, sure, there are like health benefits to them, but I'm really doing them because it's like a moment for me to be super embodied and like mm-hmm. present in the moment.
To give an idea of, you know, the different things that can work for you, for me, the moment that I feel that like self-body love at the most is when I can crouch down and my 3-year-old nieces run at me and give me a giant hug and like push me over because they're 3 and have no sense of balance. And so that is, for me, is that moment that I feel so present in my body. And you know, it's a simple thing, right? I can crouch down, I can wrap my arms around 2 little 3-year-olds, but that is a powerful moment for me.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's a moment that makes you love your body, and
exactly.
It makes you want to be kind to your body.
Exactly.
Because it can do all these amazing things.
And the second item on this very non-exhaustive list of ways to fight body shame in our culture is to get past a single story and value people as they are. We all have things going on, right? Like I can look out at all of you and I could make up a story in my head of what's going on in each and every one of your lives. I'm pretty creative, so I could probably tell a decent story. But it wouldn't be accurate, right? Like, I don't know anything about most of you. And we all have this amazing level of depth within us that most people never get to see. And so what we're saying is that we challenge you to get to know people on a deeper level. Or even at the very simplest level, except that there is a deeper level. You know, there's... I'm not going to have time to stop and talk to every person I meet on the street. I would love to talk to all of you after this, but I'm probably not going to. That I'm not going to get to know everybody's whole story. But I can actively tell myself that there is a whole story behind that, and therefore not place judgment on anybody just by what I can see.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So we have this practice in the church, and it's like a really old practice. It's one of the few really important things. It's one of the many important things we do. But it's this practice of communion. And I want us to do this because communion is a practice of embodiment. Jesus is saying, I am the bread and I am the wine in a way that we can't fully understand. And the way that communion functioned in the early church was it was a shared meal. It wasn't like, all right, everyone get in line and let's hand out wafers. It was like, all right, let's distribute bread and let's actually eat together. Because in the early Christian church, there were all different kinds of bodies, and there were all different kinds of socioeconomic classes. That was the biggest thing where, like, there's a lot of writings in the Bible about the wealthy people in the church wanting, like, the best seats, wanting to be sitting all the way in the front, and then, like, the poor and the peasants all have to sit in the back. And this practice of communion is a unifying thing where you get past that, where you have people who are wealthy giving communion to people who are poor giving it to people who are wealthy. It's a chance to interact with everyone in the community. So we're going to do this in a few moments. And this is really a chance for us to say to each other, I value you. It's a chance for us to say that each one of our lives does have more depth than we can imagine. And despite the single story we might see when we look at somebody, we have to recognize there's so much more depth going on there. And so we could turn this into like a really long, drawn-out thing, but we're not going to. You can, if that's your jam, feel free to keep talking with these people afterwards. What I want you to do is just go get a piece of bread at some point, and I want you to find somebody and give it to them and say, I value you. And that's it. So we've got one more point, one more thought on how we get past this idea, how do we get past body shaming as a culture? Because we can really get past this. We don't have to live in this culture where people are shamed, especially like in person, but also especially online is continuing more and more of a problem. And we have a third thought on how we can fight this body shaming culture.
So one of the things we're encouraging you to do is to be intentional about the comments that you make about other people's bodies. And to really and truly, before you make a comment about someone's body, ask yourself what the purpose is. Like, why are you saying this? Yeah. And really understanding that if your goal is to shame or embarrass them, or to put distance between yourself and them, that's probably not something that needs to be said. Yeah. And if your goal is to build them up, to encourage them, to honor them and their body in some way, then absolutely, that's probably a great thing to say. But I think there are many things we say about other people's bodies without thinking about them. They just sort of roll off the tongue. And what we're challenging you to do is to be more intentional about those comments that you're making. So I used to work at the National Bullying Prevention Center, And I had the privilege of working with both children who were experiencing bullying and sometimes their parents. And I was often shocked by the different ways they perceived verbal bullying. So a lot of parents would say, you know, well, they're not getting beaten up, you know, there's no physical harm, so it can't be that bad. Now, we've all heard that adage of sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me, right? This is not really true, and
Those people haven't been on Twitter.
What?
Those people haven't been on Twitter.
That is also true, right? And it was amazing to me the disconnect between what I heard from parents, often that, oh, bullying will make my child stronger, or that they need to grow a thicker skin, or especially in when we were talking about young boys, that like, oh, this is just a part of growing up, that this is what boys say to each other. And then I would turn around and I would talk to the kids involved, and they were deeply hurt. I was just deeply, deeply hurt by what they had heard. And it was on a level that their parents, at least at that point, did not understand and had not recognized that their child was being hurt in that way. And I think part of it is what we've been talking about, of the way we internalize shame. Yeah. So for a lot of us, if we can think about, you know, the first time we felt ashamed of our bodies, for me and for, I imagine, a lot of people in the room, that's before I was probably 10. You know, that can be really hard, and the things that we hear about our bodies. And people, you know, make comments about kids' bodies, about being a, you know, chubby kid or a fat kid. And kids internalize that. We all internalize that. Yeah. And the thing that I learned most from, well, not most, there are a lot of things I learned, but from working in the Bullying Prevention Center, is that I would talk to adults every day who had experienced bullying, and they could tell you in graphic detail what happened to them. They remembered it. It stuck with them. And it took years to work through the shame and the hurt and the anger that caused. Yeah. And I think what I was encouraging people to do about being intentional about the things we say to each other gets at that. Just remembering the impact that your words can have on other people and being intentional about what you want that impact to be.
Definitely. Yeah, like sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will cause me trauma.
Yeah.
That's like kind of a joke, but also like really that is like...
You can cross-stitch that on a pillow.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Words will cause me trauma. Yeah. And if we want to get past this body shaming culture into a culture that really does value all bodies and values all people of different sizes, being careful of what we say is a really important step. And so we've talked a lot about like what we have to do differently, and we've talked a lot about the intellectual stuff when we practice communion. And so we've done a lot of talking. I want to practice something that involves our bodies, that's just kind of like a celebration of our bodies. So I recognize this is going to be different for each person. So I just trust you to use your body in the way that makes the most sense for you. I would encourage you to find 2 or 3 or 4 other people and get into a semicircle, on flat ground preferably, away from the stairs. So like down here, over there, just get in a semicircle with some people. No chairs in the middle. You've got to have just a, I don't know.
Got a little space around you.
Yes. So get in a little semicircle.
Okay, and as Paul said, we recognize that what we're going to ask you to do may not be practical or safe for everybody. We're just asking you to jump up and down. It's okay. But we know
it.
That might not be, I know, I'm sorry. It might not be practical or safe for you. So this is not about like burning calories or showing what our bodies can do. This is about celebrating our bodies. So whatever that means to you, if you move your hands up and down, if you do whatever is practical and safe and comfortable for you to participate in this practice of appreciating our bodies.
Yeah, so Sarah and I will demonstrate what you're going to do. This is something that we do in the office. Sorry, my hands are so cold right now.
They really are.
Yeah, you all get that eventually. But this is something we do in the office every once in a while where we ask, like, do you need a jump? And the person's like, yeah, I guess I need a jump. And so what you do is you grab hands with the other person kind of tightly, and then you just jump in a circle. For 10 seconds, just kind of holding each other. And then you slowly come to a close. And then you've jumped and you're like, oh, this is awesome. Why don't I do this more often? So if that makes you change your group size, maybe. Otherwise, keep whatever you're comfortable with. But I would encourage you, grab hands with the people around you in some capacity. Maybe if you got a baby, try and do it in whatever capacity you can.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would encourage you to, yeah, just jump around in a circle. And just do that for like 10 seconds. All right, you can keep jumping if you want. I'm not going to stop you. I'm done with my scheduled programming here.
Thanks for listening. If you found this podcast valuable, please pass it along to others. And we'd love to hear from you, too. You can email us at info@jacobs-well.net or message Jacobs Well Minneapolis on Facebook. We see what we do as a community really making a difference for people. Since you're listening, you probably have, too. If you'd like to make a donation to support this work, you can find ways at jacobs-well.net/give. Thanks. Listen again next week or join us in person Sunday mornings at 10:30.